Hey guys, how's it going? So I'm here with the awesome Adam Neely and Evan Marion, and honestly, we haven't talked about what we're going to discuss today, but Adam's been in doing a course for us at SBL, and what I thought would be cool is if... You guys look so cool, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm just like good at paying compliments. What I thought would be cool is because they're both independent musicians living in New York, which is arguably one of the toughest places to be as an independent musician because of just, because the level is so high. But what I thought would be cool to talk about is promoting your own music and how it's changed and how you guys approach it, because you've both got your own projects that are on the go. Is yours called Sunglazer,
Sungazer I promote through, like, my YouTube channel. And, you know, I think just thinking on a global level is mostly how it's done. Like, you know, I'm a New York City musician, and, like, I play in New York, and, like, my friends are in New York, and the people I play with, but I think thinking a little bit bigger than just, you know, making it in New York City from a, like, creative standpoint is usually, like, the way to go, especially, like, when people have, like, YouTube and Instagram and all this other stuff to just spread your stuff everywhere. I mean, we don't really play that often in New York or anywhere.
The plan is to, like, though. What is the plan with it? Is the plan to do, like, album and...
Yeah.
Use that to promote live shows or...
So I have a little bit of an interesting, different sort of approach that I've been taking, because I have like a weekly, like, YouTube channel where I do, like, music education stuff, and people, like, know what I do and, like, my own creative stuff on that channel and on that platform. And so I use it as, like, hey, this is a thing that my band did and this is how I'm promoting it that way. And that's a little bit different than other people who would have a more traditional sort of cycle of, like, writing the record and, like, then releasing it out into the world and then writing the next record and, you know, touring it like that. I have a rather odd sort of relationship to the whole thing, and everything kind of lives and dies on this, like, week-to-week basis for me, which is strange, but I'm still trying to figure that out.
Are you interested in doing albums?
Yeah, and I do have a couple things. Honestly, like, it's just kind of a matter of time, you know? Like, there's only so much time I have. But, that's kind of my thing. And, you know, I do have a couple things. Sungazer has an album. I have an old album from the band called Inside Outside, which is a fun one. I did with a composer by the name of Wim Lason. I did my big band album, if anybody wants to listen to electronic jazz big band. It's called Mass Extinction Event. Everything's on...
I want to listen to that.
Yeah. Oh, dude, cool. Check it out, man. There's a lot of Berkeley guys on that one. So.
Cool.
And, you know, I put everything on Bandcamp. That's usually how I do it. I'm assuming you do, like, DistroKid, or what do you do? Like,
For distribution?
Yeah.
I use TuneCore.
TuneCore,
and then... But I still... I love Bandcamp. I pretty much favor Bandcamp.
Is TuneCore
It's like a distributor to put your stuff on Spotify and iTunes and, you know, YouTube music tracks, you know?
Yeah.
It's like whenever you look up on YouTube, like, you'll see these, like, just the audio files on YouTube.
So it's like a distribution network.
Yeah, it just kind of places it everywhere for you.
Have you ever run into...
It's like a one-time fee, or it's a yearly fee.
Yeah.
That's basically,
Have you ever run into the situation where it puts music on YouTube and then you get, like, a copyright strike on your own videos?
Yeah, I've had to... At first, I was... Yeah, they're all the time. And now I kind of just let it do it.
Okay.
I used to fight it, and then it's like, do you want the money coming from the Google AdSense thing, or do you want...
Right.
I think TuneCore pretty much tracks it down. I've been letting them just do it.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's been pretty cool.
That's awesome. Okay.
So, you know.
It's fair to say that both of you use, like, video, especially you, Adam, because you've got a YouTube channel, like, that's a weekly thing. But you as well, Evan, have used video as the primary way to promote your music and
your
projects. Would you say that that is something that you kind of got to do now? For people listening to us talking now, do you think if they were like, how do I get my music out there into a bigger audience, record companies, like, that whole model has changed so much over the last few years, do you think that now you've kind of got to be in the game of producing your own videos to really push your music out there?
For sure. I mean, one of the reasons why Snarky Puppy became such a phenomenon that they became was because they recorded these like video albums, and you know, that's how I found out about them on YouTube.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Flood and like that early stuff like just blew my mind. I was like, this is so cool. I want to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And you know, and then they grew and they kept doing videos for everything that they were doing. Very, very high production value. And it's just something that I think a lot of people come to expect is like some degree of visual that goes along with it, because it helps them connect with what you're trying to say musically. And at least for me, that's like what I've always seen. Like I generally will check out people and like see them playing, and it will help me engage with it. Makes me, just as a consumer and as a listener of music, just like get more excited seeing like, oh, that guy's, look at how awesome whatever they're doing is, and you know.
Yeah.
And I know, Evan, you like everything you do with Dana is like, and then you did the EMAR thing, like you record everything, like visuals. Like,
yeah, it's, I think it's become easier to maybe start to produce videos yourself nowadays. Yeah. You know, I think the gear has gotten better, and there's a lot of tutorials out there on how to kind of like learn how to record and sync video and everything. But I also, you know, I've always been one to just kind of like go all in and just invest in my whatever I'm trying to do.
Yeah, because some people might be listening and thinking, well, how do you do your videos?
So you can do it yourself, or at the flip side, save up some money and hire people to maybe take that edge off of, you know, allows you to kind of just focus on the music and make it as best as it can be, especially when you're trying to perform it in the studio. Yeah. And it's like, if you're trying to run around and man cameras and also go back and do takes and all this stuff. That's why I kind of like having my friend Simon do all my videos.
Yeah, because have you worked with Simon before as well?
Yeah. He actually did the video for the Mass Extinction Event thing. That was a while ago. Cool. But yeah, Simon's great. He's like he's a guitarist, but
he's a New York videographer. He's like you, Dan.
Yeah.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, Dan.
He's like, Dan is like the London muso videographer, and he's got like an evil doppelganger that lives here in New York called Simon.
Parallel alternate universe.
You could like, I'm not sure he's there. He doesn't look like Mick.
Are you into CrossFit at all?
He's getting nowhere. It's
But like, you know, when people sort of like see videos like yours, like Snarky Puppies, like, you know, these sort of like high production things, do you think that there's a fear that they might be holding out for that, and they'll be like, oh, I'm just going to hold off another 6 months until we can do the high production thing? Do you think there's a, like, obviously there's a place for high production videos, but do you think that do you think it's a must?
No.
Yeah.
I think you should do it a lot, and by the virtue of doing it a lot, you will get way much. I mean, it's like music. Like when you first pick up your instrument, you're not expected to be amazing at it. The same thing, your first video is probably not going to be pretty amazing.
Yeah, because you've got the video, and you're like, I've been checking both of you on YouTube for, I don't know, like years, you know, and we all did really crap videos.
Yeah. Well, it's like if you go back and scroll to the very like first video, it's like me, you know, Zoom had one of those, it was a blue video recording, filmed in like 360. P quality, you know, it's like like was really crappy quality, but it was enough for me to start my YouTube channel and just like sit it, you know, unedited, just sit and hit record.
Was it one of the old Zoom?
Yeah, it was a Zoom. It was the first ever video and audio recorder.
Yeah.
My first video is actually for the first.
I think you did one before me.
5 or 6 years of YouTube was just a webcam, like a crappy webcam.
Yeah.
Actually, the very first video on my YouTube channel was like before webcam. It was like a point and shoot that, like.
It took
2 minutes worth of video, and like this is so cool, and it posted like me playing, like, so whatever you come across. And of course, you know, like modern phone technology is just like,
well,
it's just ridiculous the quality you get from just your cell phone. Like, I feel like most people don't have an excuse anymore for like quality.
Even if you
just put your cell phone on a thing, that's at least a way of getting used to it, or just starting the whole process.
Remember them flip cams?
The Razer, like the flip up phones?
There was something called a flip cam. It was just like a
I know
really
what you're talking about.
Camcorder type. But like, it was the first one.
That was after the Zoom, and I remember looking at those and being like, well, maybe I should get this now. Maybe the Zoom's not cool anymore. This looks a little bit better. But I just held off on it and just kept using my crappy little Zoom.
Yeah, it's like a sickness. You just like, I want more.
Well, it's like every year the technology would get better and better. It's like, oh, this one films in 720. You know, you're like, oh, wow.
You can see all the dust on my bass now.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you blow it up on your computer screen. It's like, oh, it is less pixelated. This is, wow, the technology's getting better.
It was so crap, wasn't it? It was so crap.
It was just, you know, it's the beginning of the whole technology.
I used to spend more time researching cameras than actually recording videos.
Yeah.
I was like, that's, I just thought, this is the key. I just need to get the right camera.
Well, the thing, especially like, it comes down to like stuff that you find out anyway about music. It doesn't really matter what the nicest thing is. It matters like, you know, if you get the framing right, the lighting right, all the stuff. But when you're coming to it new, even though you're like have a bunch of like spent a bunch of time like in music, you're coming to it with the same, you know, like sort of fervor that you first come into in music. I need the best gear, and like I want the best gear, I want the best thing. But you eventually learn that it's like, no, you just you do it with what you have, and you try and make it the best you can. It's just like the process of doing it is like, it's new, it's exciting, but you know, it is important.
Do you think there's an argument over like quality versus quantity? Like,
well, we were just talking.
About that.
Well, you know, it's like Mono Neon, like what he does.
Well, it's like, you know, I watch what Mono Neon does online, and it's always so. I mean, I remember when he used to do this 4 years ago and 5 years ago, before it's just grown and evolved, but still remained, at an essence, what he does, puts music to people. I mean, he interprets everything as music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's always how he's been. And, I mean, there's a way to do both. And I think he's one guy that kind of does both.
Yeah, you're kind of sort of like, you won't publish for a while, and then you'll come out, and it'll be epic.
I was wondering, it's like, if they're... Well, people are like, we were just talking about this. It's like if you take the kind of, Mono Neon posts a lot, like almost every day.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's even maybe posts that he's already, it's reposting, repurposed and recycled maybe in a way, and reaches a whole new audience because he's already gained followers since then that now are getting exposed to. It's just... So now I think there is a way to do both,
like,
you know,
quality versus quantity.
You can clip up things enough to like cycle over the next couple days that are each interesting, and you know, for me it's like about getting like a 4 second loop or something that's so short enough to like people will rewatch it a couple times or whatever,
that's so cool.
It's like it's like if you go to most of my videos, they're like 4 seconds long. They used to be like 30-second long solos, and I'm like, who's really? Maybe they're not watching this on Instagram for that. You know, it's like YouTube's more of that place to like, I think watch something.
But yeah,
right?
Different platforms have different. Users, but people consume content differently on different platforms.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? So you can get sort of like you could take one of your videos and publish it onto YouTube as the full thing, but then chop it up into bits.
Exactly.
And then repurpose that on Instagram and Facebook and...
Link in bio. Four-second, five-second clips and go, full video, link in bio. You know, like, that's my, like...
So you put it on YouTube, you put it on Instagram, and like, link in bio, or hit the link below the thing, you know, on YouTube, in the description. Where are you sending people to? Where should people send them to?
Oh, like in terms of like where things are going? I mean, all the faults it has, YouTube is kind of like usually the place for me personally, because that's the end result. But then, you know, for, I guess for my original music, I'd say, hey, buy my stuff on Bandcamp or listen to it on Spotify or whatever. And that's a way of, you know, actually making some money after the end of this very long process of putting a lot of stuff into everything. And, you know, I think it's just there's a pipeline of like, you know, I guess from the very bottom, it's like Instagram stories is now the big thing. And I try and make sure to do one or two of those a day just to make people engaged. And just like, it's a funnel, like, I guess, like from the very bottom, informal, like Instagram and then like Facebook and then up to YouTube. And then eventually, hopefully, maybe they buy your stuff. Yeah. But it's like people want to be engaged with your life.
Yeah.
And which is a very, you know, it's different than it ever really was because you weren't going to be engaged in like, Chick Corea's life or whoever. I mean, like, you would buy his albums and see him play live. Yeah. But now it's kind of a different landscape, I think, in some regards.
Do you think that it's important for people to choose? Do you think it's important for people to be everywhere? Be on Instagram, be on Facebook, be on YouTube, do it all? Or do you think it's more positive to concentrate on certain channels?
On one thing.
Maybe one thing, maybe like a couple.
Well, I think we've
My point is, like there's Snapchat and there's Instagram and there's Facebook and there's probably something else that I don't know about. Like, you know.
Musical.ly. That's what the kids.
Musical.ly.
Musical.ly.
Yeah, exactly.
The kids.
Damn them kids.
Well, it's like, I think for me, YouTube or Facebook was real, or MySpace. Let's go back to MySpace is where I used to upload stuff. And meet people, like, you know, I met the Pastoriuses on MySpace. I ended up meeting all these people on MySpace. And then it turned into, when Facebook became open for everyone, it turned into Facebook statuses, you know, promoting my gigs and, like, going. It's like all these platforms opened up one after another, you know. So I kind of just evolved along with it. But I think, nowadays, I think go all in. Everything. Get your business started on, well, business or, you know. Just get your playing. Yeah. He doesn't have to be a business, you know what I mean?
Well, it is a business. Yeah. Well, hopefully it's a business, you know, I suppose. Hopefully you're going to make money out of it, right?
Totally. It's like, it's just about...
It helps.
Just getting the music out there on it's just everything, I think.
Yeah, and it can feel really overwhelming. That. Like, I mean, I before the YouTube thing, I was like, I don't want to do this social media thing. But then I realized, like, no, this is you have to treat it seriously. This is promotion. This is advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And, 20 years ago, we didn't have these tools, but you still had to work very hard to get the word out. You just didn't have these tools.
Right.
And you know, my mother actually was contemporary classical soprano who would, like, hold concerts and recitals. Oh, yeah. And, like, she worked with John Cage. She's worked with, like, all these, like, contemporary classical people. I've had talks with her about, like, you know, promoting your material and promoting. And she's like, you know, it's the same... 30 years ago. I don't want to. She might hate me. 30 years ago, it's just you had to spend the same amount of work. It's just you had to, like, deal with, like, newspapers and deal with
media, right?
Yeah, just a much different grind, but it was still a grind. And it actually hasn't changed. It's just you have to treat it seriously. If you're going to be a musician, you have to treat promotion seriously, no matter what era you find yourself in. So. I thought that was interesting when I was talking to her about it, and I realized, like, oh, I should probably, like, treat each thing seriously. I hate doing it, but now it's a part of it. It's like a routine. It's a habit. And, you know, I can also make it...
You can find the fun in it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like you end up finding... actually fun. It's like you can... I don't know.
Do you prioritize other channels above other? Like, obviously, for you, Adam, it's YouTube. You prioritize, like, if you have to do one thing, it's YouTube. But what about you, Evan? Do you prioritize one channel over another?
I think whatever I do on I think YouTube is where I want my art to be. Yeah. It's like what stands. I want it to be a catalog. I want it to stand a test of an evolution. It's like, you know, last year when I accidentally deleted those videos I did with Justin Brown. I thought I was editing a playlist on the mobile app, and I accidentally just wiped some videos from my channel, and I was like, ah! And I flipped out because then they lose their place in the flow of time for me, and it really upset me.
Is that why
me.
You didn't want to upload them again?
Yeah, I just... Because they would be... It would be out of time. It would just be out of, you know, the flow of my... Yeah. I feel like they would just be out of the flow of my evolution on my channel, you know? That, like, really, you know, bothered me enough to be like, well, I just can't do that. It's on to the next thing. You know, it's an evolution, and it stacks up so that hopefully when YouTube's around and... I don't know, even 10 years from now or something, it's like you can just kind of, there's a history to me being an artist, you know.
Chronological order.
It's like maybe I've gotten better since the bottom, you know. That's up for people to determine, or, you know, but it's like hopefully what I do as an artist can stack up, and as you can see, the video quality gets better, you know. It's like it's an evolution, and so YouTube's for the art. I think Instagram is more, for me, it's like it all encompasses YouTube. I think, like, Instagram's got to somehow going to YouTube too. It's video and photos and everything, but, you know, it's also like digestion of content's gotten so small on Instagram for me that it's like, 4 seconds. I'm like, how short can I make these videos and still get away with people liking them?
You know? I have a problem with, like, the ROI of it, like, in terms of, like, I always wonder what I'm getting back from the investment of time I'm putting in stuff. And the thing that kind of, like, flipped it for me and made me really start thinking about it is that last year, the year before 2016, I, for pretty much the entire year, I did like a 1 hour live stream on Facebook.
Nice. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For the entire year, every week, and I used to like figure out a presentation and we'd stream it directly onto Facebook.
Yeah.
And it was like DSLR, it was really nice. And like sometimes we'd have like 18,000 views within the hour. And it was, and I was convinced I was just getting like massive ROI from it. I was like, sure, this is just doing just so good for the SBL brand. And it got to, and it, when it ticked over into January 2017, I was just so shagged. I was just like, you know what, I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. And if the numbers drop, I'll do it again, right? But I'm just not going to do it and see what happens. And nothing changed, nothing. And I was just, and then it made me start thinking about all the other stuff that I'm doing and just thinking, like, I'm busting my ass to do this and this
That's how we evolve, though, right? It's like that's how, what we learn and we refine our craft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, that's the beautiful thing about it.
Do you think you get fearful of letting something go?
Well, oh, for sure.
Yeah.
The thing I that's kind of like blown my mind is my demographic. The people who like really connect with my videos are much younger, significantly younger than, I mean, there's been a lot of people who like, who enjoy it, but the people who like get excited about the videos have always, or like recently have been skewing like high school age or college age. And it flipped. There's a moment where I realized like, oh, this, you know, when I'm doing all these things, when I'm promoting myself and whatever, I'm saying like teaching, learn music with Adam or whatever. like, you know, it, for some people it might be, you know, just something that they carry with them for a very long time, even though it, they just consumed it once on the internet once. There's no real way of quantifying that idea of like you affected somebody and they're going to remember, and that's going to be something that carries with them for a long time. And so, I mean, you have to like pick and choose exactly how you create content for what channel or whatever, but like know that even though the views might be like to the wind and then it's done, like there's some, there might be something deeper that you like planted in the seed of like your audience. And that, you know, honestly, like OC, like your, the thing, you, original thing with Dana, like that affected me a lot. Like I hold that like video and like that music and like, I was like, oh, that was so cool. The first, I remember the first time I saw that, that, you know, that sort of thing is like getting affected by Evan's music. And then that sort of carried on to like the things that I checked out after that and blah, blah, blah. So it's hard to like quantify that, but that's something that I do think about a lot. And the moment where I thought about this, I'm like, oh God.
It's the stuff you don't see, right?
Yeah, it's the stuff you don't see, although I do see it occasionally, because on Facebook I was, or Twitter or something, I was tagged. There is a band, like a high school band room. They tuned timpanis to the lick, and they played do-do-do-do-do-do-do, which is hilarious. And then the camera pans, and there's this whole like room of like high school students like doing a golf clap, and I thought that was really funny. I was like, wait a second, like they thought to tag me, and like this is ridiculous that they had like this whole thing based upon a dumb joke on my channel.
Yeah.
And that's going to become this thing.
And it's going to like carry with them, and like that's I just thought that was kind of cool. So like whatever you do, it does have a little bit more of an impact. Maybe not something that you can say right now for what you're doing, but it does have an impact.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Anyway. Yeah, yeah. So with that, like, because obviously like, all the content, or like predominantly most of the content, me included, that we produce, is like free on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so like, where do you sort of like guys stand, and what do you feel about music being free to, for the most part, right now? And then also, like, just going back to Snarky Puppy.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting that you can, like, pretty much all of their music is free on YouTube, and they sell albums as well, which is really counterintuitive, or will be to a lot of people. Like I'm sure, like old schoolers would think, well, why would people buy the album if they're putting the video on YouTube? You know, like where do you guys stand on that?
Well, that's not how I listen to music on YouTube. I mean, I don't like. I mean, there's different ways of consuming the content, which I think is different because people care about ease of content, so a lot of times people like go for streaming services, but then people also care about the idea, like we're all very moral creatures, we really love the idea of supporting the artist, and so people love to buy it even if they can get the whole thing for free. That's just something that is deeply ingrained in us, and I think the more that like we can encourage that behavior because we're you know, I think the better it is for, you know, for us. But that's just, you know, the, we can't fight it. It already came. It already came 10 years ago. It came 20 years ago. Yeah. we have to embrace it and learn how to do it. And I feel like, you know, our generation is, you know, like, in future generations, we'll figure out how to do that more and more. It's just, you can't.
I think the model's kind of sort of like halfway. I don't think it's settled as yet, has it? It's kind of just in this kind of shift in,
It hasn't solidified, but and it might not solidify.
Yeah,
that's another
thing. Even interesting. Yeah, even more interesting, yeah.
I do it for the love of just, I do it just for the love of doing it. Even if it's not going to make any money, it's like, again, it's about this, for me personally, it's about creating this evolution and this kind of like selfish evolution. You know, it's like having a thing that dictates my whole career as an artist till I die. Hopefully YouTube will be around that long. I can just keep creating, you know, this evolution and this stack of my legacy.
Like, what are you going to do, not make music? Like,
I mean, I've tried that. I've tried that, and I just go absolutely mental.
I'm not going to say who it was, but I spoke to sort of, like, notable bass player a few weeks ago. I was like, when's the next album coming? You haven't released anything in a while. And he was like, there is no next album. And I was like, well, why?
Wow.
He was like, because I can't sell any albums. He's like, it's just going to go on Spotify. And I was, like, so gutted because he was just, like, a hero of mine. I was like...
That's it.
Like just it was a bit of a weird kind of. I was just like, I didn't really know how to take it. I didn't know what to say to him either. Try and convince him that there was a.
I think we have a very different relationship to the things that we create now. I think if I make a YouTube video, I know I'm gonna make money on advertising, which is great. But if I'm gonna be doing it, I'm gonna say it this way: I can't rely upon selling anything. I have to monetize what I do differently. I have Patreon's been great for that. People who want to donate and say like, hey, I want like your channel. And that's been a whole thing. Shows have been great. I mean, people still sell CDs at shows all the time and merchandise at shows all the time. And we haven't known anything else besides this new thing. We haven't known the system of selling
records. Company gives advance, going studio for like 2 weeks.
Like, that's an ancient system.
Down
that's
some
like
beers or whatever people used to do.
We don't do that. That's not how it is. Yeah. And we also do all of it ourselves usually. Like, it's, we record everything in, you know, home studios.
I mean,
you're mixing your own album.
That's the thing. I've just learned, I'm trying to even figure out how I can do my own videos at a certain level. And that's why I've kind of, you know, there is a breaking point in what I want to be able to do. And how I can do it all myself, you know. It's like, that's why I've taken kind of mixing under my own. You know, I've just taught myself how to do it, and I've just.
Is that because you want a particular sound though?
It is more from my own
super geek. If you just like, I want to learn about this, or is it because you want a particular sound?
Or is it a mix of the two? It's my own like obsession over like tweaking and fine tuning sounds and like how I want it to.
And
you
don't want to pay an engineer like.
I mean, I would just...
To mix it for two months.
It's really not even... Yeah, see, it doesn't really totally come down to money. It's more me feeling bad that I would be like, hey, man, I'm sorry, but can the snare drum just come up 1 dB? Okay, cool. And then the next day, you know what? Let's split the difference. Let's do 0.5, maybe? And the next day, you know what? Never mind. I was just... let's just put it back to where it was. And the next week, you know, maybe it is too deep. It's just my own upset. And I do these tweaks and I do these things. And eventually I always find my result. And I'm always happy with my result.
Yeah.
But it's just a process that I would just like to be in my own zone for and just be in my own place. Same with practice. You know, it's like practicing. Like, you were talking about the whole live stream thing. That's something that I've never really embraced.
And I want to start. I'm sure it'll work for some people. I just thought it was interesting that I just killed myself doing it. And then,
I was just at like this YouTube roundtable thing up in London for OE Art, which is a recording school and studio.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Sarah Longfield, who is a YouTube guitarist, and she's like really amazing like guitar player. But she was saying that Twitch, like...
that's the video gaming thing.
Right? Yeah.
People go live on Twitch and stream Twitch, them playing video games. I know that.
She was like, oh, they want me to like do show like the creative process of you writing music. And that's where I think a lot of people are going to start headed is like live streaming. And that sounds terrifying.
Sounds scary.
Sounds terrifying.
It's very personal.
And I've seen, I've checked out Twitch right now. I was like, all right, well, if this is where it's all going, like, maybe I can get ahead of the curve. And I see what's on there right now, and it's interesting because it's mainly people doing requests. That's the thing that people like to do, and they turn a show. So, like, they get requests, and then they listen to a song briefly, and it's like this whole thing, like, learn it by ear really quick, and then they start playing the song.
Okay. Yeah.
That's mainly what the content is right now on Twitch. Okay. Uh-huh. 5 years from now, who knows what it's going to be, but I bet you the tech companies that rule our lives, because really that's what it is, they're going to want us to do more and more live streaming. So it's going to kind of be up to us in a second. I don't know when that's going to be, but to figure out how to make it. I don't know what it is.
And it's a completely free platform, not in terms of users, but in terms of viewers.
Yeah.
So there's no sort of like...
Well, the way that people make money is through tips, and they make a lot of money. Yeah. People will donate like $5 or like there's all have subscriptions or whatever.
Some bitcoins.
Bitcoins, yes. Crypto. Buy Bitcoin. But like, yeah, that's a new way. And it's like, it's just in terms of how artists are evolving. And for me, I'm never really in the idea of like, this is the way I want to do it and I'm not going to change. You have to
embrace.
So
it's a donation. It's a donation thing.
Yeah. Right? And, you know, YouTube's adopt that sort of thing with Super Chat. And, like, the thing is that this is how the industry and this is how it's all going to grow. And it's going to only get, quote, worse from here. It's just you have to be, as a musician, as a creator, as a person who is promoting your own stuff, you have to know what it is. You can't pretend that this isn't here. And I feel like so many people are going to stick their head in their sand and just pretend it isn't there, but it's already here.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how the younger generation is already consuming everything, already doing everything, and they're going to grow up with that knowledge, and they're going to grow up and replace everybody else. So I'm in this mindset. I'm in this mindset, like, already. I'm like, oh, God, well, coming for us.
Yeah,
they're coming for us.
You can live stream on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube, on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's already there.
Yeah.
Why do people live stream on Twitch rather than Facebook?
Right.
The system is just a better, more stable platform. It's considered more professional. People go to Twitch to find channels that they want to watch. The environment is much more, it's much better for people who want to stream. So Twitch gives a lot more support. It's a less buggy platform. And, you know, they've been doing this for years with gaming and now they're looking to do other things.
Yeah, because it was a gaming platform, wasn't it?
It still is. It's huge for esports, like a massive industry now. And like, you know...
Where people watch live streams of like football matches and...
Oh, no. StarCraft matches.
StarCraft.
Yeah. Oh, man, you have no idea. It's multi-billion dollar industry. It's so huge. Yeah.
And still on the tip thing?
Well, not necessarily for that, but people will do that for tips. Yeah. But then they have these massive tournaments with like... Huh. Yeah, it's a whole thing. There's endorsements, you know, like venture capital is now going into it. It's a big thing.
It's fair to say, isn't it, that the video platforms, like Twitch included probably, but especially YouTube, is like content marketing for whatever you try to push, right?
That's true too, yeah.
Yeah. So you're, for instance, like you've got various things, like you do your Patreon, and that the YouTube channel...
Kind of pushing the Patreon,
and for you, Evan, it's like you've got your videos on YouTube, and that markets your Bandcamp page and markets your live shows.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
All works
synergistically.
Some people might think they're giving it away for free, but it's actually you're not. You're marketing something from the back of it.
There's links. You know, there's path to follow.
Yeah,
merchandise actually is a thing that you'd be surprised at how reasonable like that is to rely upon merchandise as like a thing. If you have a cool thing, somebody's like, oh yeah, I want to buy that t-shirt. Or like there's all these like things which tie into it. And you know, I was talking to Rick Beato,
super interesting dude, isn't
he? He has a great channel, and
that's like a great Holdsworth like where he breaks down Holdsworth's playing.
He's a fantastic musician.
Where's he based?
He's in Atlanta. He's a fantastic like musician, YouTuber too, and he's from an older generation, but he fully embraced the YouTube platform.
He's full on it.
And he sells his Beato book, like he has a thing that he sells. But like he's saying like, you know, Pat Metheny the whole conversation. Like, he doesn't allow cell phones, like, at his concerts. So there's now a whole generation of people who just don't know Pat Metheny and don't haven't, like, really heard Pat Metheny and doesn't...
Because Pat Metheny doesn't understand the power of social or content marketing and that people playing... He thinks that that sort of, like, degrades and people will not buy his album because people are...
Somehow.
Which is just, like, BS, right?
Right, and Rick Beato is giving away all these lessons of his for free, and he's being able to, like, make a career like out of selling stuff and like promoting stuff on YouTube, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, if Pat Metheny just decided that he was like, all right, every concert, can everybody live stream this concert? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like on everybody's phones and everybody's like,
That would go out like,
it would go out like everybody is live streaming Pat Metheny's gig. Yeah, yeah. And then it's an event and then people get excited and it's like, oh my God. And, you know, it's all about this, these little things, these marketing things that, that you know, they might deeply affect somebody, turning this conversation back around. Yeah. Like, Pat Metheny, but, you know, in 10 or 20 years, like, his impact on younger people is going to be a lot less than somebody else who's, you know, really embraced it. So I think it's that, you know.
Do you think they're the sort of, like, the last generation of musicians that will... think like that?
It's possible.
For me, because like, all my friends, they're just sort of like fully, they understand it.
Yeah.
They understand sort of like, what bands like Snarky Puppy and doing, they totally understand that, you know, that the free content promotes and markets the paid content. And that just because you're giving something away for free doesn't mean people aren't going to buy it, because there's different ways of consuming it. Some people want it on their phones or in their car or, you know, whatever it is. They just want access to it in different ways, and they'll support people, you know, just because you've got something for free doesn't mean, you know, you're not going to... In fact, I think Radiohead were the first
They were
stuff like that.
Yeah. They were way ahead of the curve. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's another band, I can't remember, was it Nine Inch Nails that did it?
They gave me the slip.
Okay, so there was a band, it could be Nine Inch Nails actually, that they were giving it up, the album, released the album, they gave it away for free on the website, but you could buy it on iTunes, and they monitored the sales. And when they stopped giving it away for free on their website, the sales on iTunes dropped.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Which is really counterintuitive, because you'd expect that they'd go up, but the virality got taken out of it, and then the sales dropped.
Well, you know, like, people want to pay money. People do want to pay money. On Bandcamp, they have a thing where you can give your music away for free and just, like, name your price.
That's what I did with me and Dana's new album.
Yeah.
What's your experience with it? Is it like, positive?
I had no idea.
Give me the money.
I thought it would be just cool to have people just download an official bootleg, you know, a free official, you know, like, I mixed it and mastered it. You know, I just wanted to be in control of that and give it away for free and just be like, here you go, here's a proper bootleg instead of like live videos people take online and everything. And it's been the support's been really, really kind of surprising.
Do you think there's a place for giving the album away for free and creating custom content that's going to support the album, that got maybe sort of like the recording of bonus material?
That's what I mean. Maria Schneider is another she's a fantastic, like, big band jazz composer. And she's very much, it's interesting to see her perspective, because she's very much in the old guard. She doesn't sell it, put anything on iTunes or Spotify or anything like that. She does everything through something called Artist Share. But she is very into crowdfunding and very into bonus things, like you get a bonus executive producer credit on the album. And so she's able to raise a lot of capital to record a big band album, because that... it's incredibly expensive to do something like that. But a lot of it is through this bonus perk thing, and people love the story. People love the narrative of, like, you going into the studio and recording an album and, like, the ups and downs and trials and tribulations. And, you know, you can edit it and you can make it seem like it went better than it did, which is one of the things I do all the time. I was like, look at me, I'm amazing. These are just the things that I played
that
right.
That worked.
But, you know, that's a part of it, is also, like, people like a narrative, people like a story, and so, like, the behind the scenes can construct that, and then they feel more emotionally invested in you. And a big part of the whole, like, social media advertising is getting people emotionally invested in what it is you're doing.
And they get to to be part of the team that built it.
Yeah,
in a way.
We need
sort of investment to help build this awesome thing. Are you guys going to sort of like, you know, will you be a part of that?
Yeah, and I think people respond to that better than like even just the
buy
perks.
This. Yeah, just yeah, buy that. Yeah.
I think people like that a lot more, and I like that a lot more. Yeah, like I support a bunch of people on Patreon and buy their albums, whatever. It's not even because it's the right thing to do. It's just because I enjoy it. I mean, I guess it kind of is, but I enjoy doing that, and like, you know, I believe in somebody, so I, you know, we're so wired to just like, if you like something, you should support it. Maybe it's not even hardwired. That's just like how socially, like, you know. But anyway,
have you done any crowdfunding type things, like, and thought about doing it for an album?
I thought about doing it for an album, but that's where I kind of fell into what Alan tried to do something, I think, a couple years ago.
Holdsworth.
Yeah, and he, I think he fell into the trap of he felt pressured. To deliver some, and then he ended up not going through on it. And
I've seen a few people, you know, do that. Actually, go through, like, what platform is it?
It's Kickstarter.
Kickstarter and GoGo, Indiegogo, isn't it?
Yeah,
I've seen a few people do it, and then, you know, and it happens. The money comes in. And then in terms of, like, coming up with a deliverable on time, they're just completely, you know, and then people are going nuts, and where's the album, and we invested you. So I do think for bands, if you're going to take investment, you've got to come up with the goods on time.
It's hard.
It's very hard.
It's hard to be, like, an artist on demand. Yeah. That's a big thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, with the YouTube thing, I'm able to give people stuff without it being art. I hate to put it crassly, but a lot of it's just me talking at a camera. Yeah. And while I'm talking at the camera, they're still like, oh, I see Adam talking all the time, while I can actually then focus on like doing recordings and like focusing on that sort of thing. Mm. And I rely very heavily on crowdfunding, because Patreon is crowdfunding, except like just in small doses.
Yeah.
So I am very much a proponent of it, but I do feel an enormous amount of pressure to produce. Because if I don't give them the YouTube video that week, that I will feel like I let them down. Even if they don't necessarily say that. Yeah, and even if they're like, oh, it's fine, like, whatever.
And what's your schedule, like, once a week?
I've done once a week for the past 2.5 years, and it is gone fine so far.
But you do feel pressure to get that, to get it out.
I just released a video an hour ago.
Yeah.
Because it's Monday, and Monday is my release schedule. And yeah, there's always a pressure. It's always in the back of my mind. I'm always organizing everything around, okay, I got to get this thing done here, and it has to be done here. And I do everything myself, which is a choice. Yeah. But, you know, I've started bringing in other people, because the Patreon has allowed me to hire videographers occasionally and, you know, hire some people to help me out. But part of it is also, like, what everyone's saying, like, you want your control freak a lot of the time. Like, you want to have the, just like, no, that jump cut was not right. I want it, like, 3 frames earlier.
Yeah.
Wait a second, no, it's, like, maybe 2 frames earlier. Yeah. Like,
well, do you think having a weekly schedule helps you not, like, just, like, almost, like, force yourself into it? Like, I'm sure, have you published
stuff?
Yeah,
probably would.
Have you published stuff that you're not happy with? Like, I have. Because of the schedule, I'm like, this needs to go out.
I definitely have.
It's either perfect or done, maybe not both at the same time.
Yeah, well, I've also, like, I know if something's not going to be good, so I can kind of hedge it a little bit. So by, like, and I'll cut stuff out all the time to make sure, like, that's stupid. I don't want that in there.
Yeah.
I also, like, make sure, you know, a lot of the time I release video essays. That's, like, a thing that I do, and that's a new burgeoning thing. People really like video essays, where it's basically people talking and making a point about, like, film is, like, a big thing. Video essays about film or whatever. And I do it about music. And I think there's a couple other people who do this sort of video. And it takes sometimes months to make one of these things, because I have to research it. I have to talk to, like, I have to read scholarly journals. I have to, like, actually make sure that what I'm saying is, like, actually true, because otherwise the comment section is going to be like, actually, blah, blah, and which, you know, I've been that guy before, but now I know how it feels. So I'm never doing that again. So, you know, I would try and make it the best video I can, but that might take months. So I have to figure out ways of, like, doing less time intensive videos. And, you know, it's all about time management and knowing what you can reliably deliver. But I have had to make sacrifices in quality in terms of, like, things that I want to do but can't do week to week.
Yeah.
So it's a constant, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know how it is, man. I know you know how it is.
I know how it is. We've talked about all the social channels and stuff like that and how you guys use it. And like we could talk about promoting gigs and stuff like that, but you know, I want to respect your time. But before you go, I want to talk about record companies because...
Oh, yeah.
Because interesting, they're here still, you know, yeah. And they're functioning to a certain extent. When do you think, like, would you guys ever go to a record company? And what do you think the future may hold for them?
I've tried.
You tried, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, these are smaller electronic labels and everything like that. But what I've learned very quickly is that there's a certain amount of conforming that has to happen to fit into whatever the label's brand is. Yeah.
And what specifically are you going to them for? Is it
It's distribution.
It's distribution.
Yeah, I'm not looking. I can self. I want to be able to self fund everything because I do need to have.
Because you can
creative.
Record it at home.
You know, it's like those things I can let go of. But it's the distribution. It's their network of contacts to promote the album, to get it in features, to get it blogs.
And,
you know, things like that. But I've learned that. It's the same, it just doesn't really work out with me in that method with record labels and things like that. So I'd rather let it just be direct from me to whoever likes it and whoever wants to buy it. And, you know.
Do you think there's a place for record labels for smaller artists like, you know,
definitely.
Like you guys? You do, yeah.
Yeah, somebody who's, you know, who's, a label can kind of help somebody find direction, I think, you know, who is looking for it and... But I feel like I've always wanted to just... I mean, everyone wants to do their own thing, but a lot of times people are... Their own thing is rooted so deeply in something else that it's conforms to a label perfectly. It conforms to that rock label or it conforms to that electronic label. But for me, I've always found this ground where I'm like, well, I like a little bit of that and a little bit of that and a little bit of that. And then all of a sudden, I just have music that I'm like, this is just me. I'm just going to release it and just... Whoever wants to listen and buy it or whatever, it's like it's just up to them, you know.
What about you, Adam?
Well, from like an economic standpoint, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to go with a big label. I don't think the idea of the advance and all that stuff.
Yeah,
because I feel like I've heard this thing 360 deals, for pop artists, and then they own you.
So that's when they own the publishing,
just everything,
the merchandise, and everything.
Yeah.
The tour, they're taking a cut of everything.
They're taking a cut of you,
So when it comes down to it, you've just got a little slither left,
And then so the alternative is smaller labels, and I think there definitely is for sure a place for them. They'll help. I don't have a whole lot of experience, and actually Ben Levin, who's hanging out right here, his band Bentony is on a small label, and
we should have got you hooked up with the mic next time.
Doing the small label thing, I feel like can be great for certain people and great for certain bands because it helps you put you on certain tours, like opening for certain people, and it helps with like general like promotional stuff and distribution stuff.
Yeah.
And I think the small label, I think there's actually room for growth in that. Yeah. For me personally, I don't need a label yet. I might never actually be on one, but I think that there is room, but it's not the paradigm's completely shifted. You're not going to get signed and get money, and it's fine.
Right.
That's not a thing.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, everybody was like gigging around, sort of like talking about when we're going to get signed.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
That's not a thing anymore. And doesn't need to be a thing because for the most part, you know, you can create your own, as we've been talking about, your own content, and you can put it on different channels and promote your music. But as you're saying, you may need help actually getting your foot in the door to get on tours and maybe certain distribution channels.
It's like, it's not for money. You don't go to a label for money. You go for it for a different reason, which is to grow your community and to be just for promotional things. Yeah. I think it can be very useful. And I have had friends who have been on small labels that it was a very positive experience, also very negative experience.
In what way?
Well, one guy, I won't say his name, just really didn't like the label because they insisted on mastering his record, and then it was really not the best master.
So it was like creatively they...
Kind of inserted themselves in the process, and it wasn't the best relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, it might be very different with other other labels. Like, they'll have access to, like, cheaper vinyl distribution deals. And, like, right, you know, yeah, you'll be on, like, compilations with other artists. And that, yeah, that's another way. And then other people, they'll have shows of just the label. And that's a way that you can, like, promote your material to new people. And there's all sorts of things. It's, like, a more community-based thing, from what I've understood.
Yeah,
so,
Is there any labels that just jump out at you as great examples of labels that are doing it right?
Like, the whole, like, ground up.
I was just about,
hoping
you could. Yeah. Never learned a question. I knew you were going to ask
that. Ground up is a good label.
Yeah. What do you think they're doing that's right?
Community based. I mean, they're just really, really community driven.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea. They took the whole idea that was behind Snarky Puppy and kind of made it.
And expanded it into different bands.
Yeah, know, all their friends. Yeah. And because all their friends make wonderful music, you know?
Yeah.
And they just wanted to showcase them and bring them in, and now they have their label and their artists roster
and everything. Yeah, they're rocking it. Adam, where do people find you?
YouTube.com/AdamNeely. That's where they find me.
Evan, where do people find you?
You can find me at YouTube.com/EMarien. M-A-R-I-E-N. Yes.
And are you doing anything live? Are you going on tour or?
I'm planning a European tour with my brother Dana Hawkins in May of this year, and we have an album coming out probably shortly before that. I'm just mixing and mastering it.
We were actually talking about something interesting before. We were talking about you got on this European tour and you were saying that you wanted to record the shows, and I was like, I'm sure other bands have done it, bigger bands, but is there a way of recording that tour, each gig, and then being able to sell it to the people that have been at the gig?
God, that would be terrifyingly complicated. Well,
Totally. If you're okay with letting, like, you could, well, you line level out from the board right into the laptop at the end of the night, you have the multi-track show, you adjust the levels and just make sure it's just sitting in a certain way, and you just hit export, and you could probably do that all in a night. But if you want to really go in and fine-tune the frequencies and the dynamics of the experience, because for me, each of my songs have a different dynamic range, and that's where I get a little bit heady about it.
Yeah. Would it's you like stress you? You'd be like, no!
Flashes is a little bit louder than a song like Sweatin'. And some of the new stuff hits a little bit harder with, like, Four on the Floor stuff that needs a more dancier energy. So it's you know, manipulating the compressors for different things. That's where it's like, it takes me some time.
Maybe for your project, it's maybe not the best.
Maybe not for mine. Yeah. But I still, it's like, you know, months later, I can still release it. That's the idea, is like, to be able to give people a proper
bootleg type thing.
You know, something that is the way I would want that.
And
want
you
the
could
show
sort of like
too.
Film on the road as well, and then sort of like edit it down.
Got a couple G7
bootleggy video type thing. I know.
Hey everybody, Evan here.
Yo, we're about to play in Dublin. All right, everyone.
Crowd is lit.
Crowd super lit. Everyone say yeah.
Yeah.
We're laughing, but I'm gonna be doing this.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like.
Everybody say yeah.
You do this every like 3 weeks or something. The gig vlog.
Yeah, I do these gig vlogs.
Every other
week. That's right.
Yeah, where it's just like me, like doing these like fun little.
Hey, it's Adam.
Yeah, and man, I do that during the thing, and I edit every instance of me out because
I feel like this is so awkward. Yeah.
God. So most of the gig vlogs are just me.
I'm so glad that you understand how painful it is to watch yourself on camera. It's horrendous, isn't it?
When you're alone in a car with nobody looking at you, it's awesome. It's like, when you're in a room with a bunch of musicians who are judging you anyway because of your playing, and now you're judging because Sam was fucking YouTube.
I'll tell you about that. We didn't, because obviously we mentioned Snarky Puppy. We should mention Wolfpack as well, because they're doing a freaking killing job at using YouTube, you know, and Jack Stratton is just. When you were talking about feeling uncomfortable, and I just imagine, I don't know if you've seen it, like Jack Stratton dancing in the park. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
He's just got like, I wonder why you're the greatest dancer. And he's, oh, man.
Well,
love them guys.
They have such a good way of promoting it, because they really just take like cell phone footage, really, is like a lot of their stuff. Like,
That's a great example, actually, of being doing it on a budget, but that's actually become their style.
They've put a filter on to make it look old, haven't they?
Yeah.
The filter, and it's also just like how they approach it, because it's like this like meme, irreverent humor, or whatever like that.
Yeah.
You just have to embrace that, and like people, I find their stuff hilarious, and I would rather for what they're doing, I mean, for different things, like higher production value definitely adds a lot, but for what they're doing, it's like, that's their thing, and they get, you know, millions and millions of views. Like, use what you can.
They've been on Letterman, right?
What?
They were on Letterman a few months ago. And
They're doing some really great gigs.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they were, Colbert, yeah.
Right, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's great, and they sounded killing.
Yeah, so if you guys haven't checked out, it's Vulf, V-U-L-F. Yeah.
You get Joe Dart involved, man.
I need to get him on. I know.
He's so good.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's good. Anyway, which camera am I talking to? This one. Hey, guys. Adam Neely, Evan Marion. Take it easy. See you in the shed. Bye.